Hi everyone, welcome to the B2B Sales Podcast. I'm Thibaut.
And I'm Ara.
Every second and fourth week of the month, we interview thought leaders, experts, or top performers in B2B sales.
During 30 to 45 minutes, we will deep dive into topics like modern prospection, pipeline management tactics, or innovative sales tools to help you navigate the complex world of B2B sales.
We're on a mission to change the way society sees sales. This profession is one of the most rewarding ever, yet many people are afraid to do sales or they choose this career by default.
So get ready for your dose of sales wisdom and enjoy the show.
Hi everyone and welcome to this new episode of the B2B Sales Podcast. So today's guest is actually very interesting. So I saw and I heard about him the first time into a call, like a workshop and video of Josh Brown, where he was explaining how he painted like a sponge so he could throw it to, you know, send it to his customers and prospects so they could throw it to copiers without being fired. So please everyone, welcome Dale Dupre, founder of the Sales Rebellion.
Thanks for having me, bro. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Welcome, Dale. So yeah, Dale, can you maybe tell us a bit more about you, your background and yeah, where you're from?
Yeah. So everybody that doesn't know me, my name's Dale Dupre, most commonly known as the Copier Warrior, but most recently dubbed as the leader of the Sales Rebellion, which I founded in March of 2019. So just this year, coming up on our year anniversary here in a few months. My background starts... for me, my story and the things that you need to know about me and my sales walk are all founded on the walk of my father. And there's an extensive story of my father from that I like to tell, from high school to his college years and to his working life. But it's founded on tragedy, where he had everything kind of laid out, planned for himself, scholarships to play sports, and it all just crumbled in front of him. And instead of wallowing in self-pity or, you know, what am I going to do now? He took action and became the modern day Dwight Schrute of the 1970s, selling paper for a copier firm. And copiers became something that he was very passionate about, but mostly because of what in the B2B world copiers allowed for, which was to get into some of the most elite businesses that you ever knew existed. Because a copy machine back in the 60s and 70s was rare and it cost more money. It was like the equivalent of $100,000 today for the little copier that you have at the office, right? It was wild. So my dad was able to kind of break through the mold and become the top rep at his firm, eventually founded his own company in 1984. And I was born in 1985. People like to say that toner runs in my blood because of that. So it's been about 13 years in the B2B space selling copiers. Before that, I was a musician, traveled all over the United States in a heavy metal band, signed to a major record label. I have my story of hustle and grinding, as the Gary Vee kids of 2019 like to say.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, the things that molded me and made me a better salesperson were all found in the shadow of my father and his legacy. I lost him in 2016 to cancer, and I've made it my mission to make sure that he never dies. And that's really all you need to know about the Copier Warrior at this point.
Okay, great. No, that's a really, really cool story. And so that's like, we can see your values are really interesting. So yeah, that's really cool. And actually, so I invited you to the podcast because I'm like a huge fan of your style when it comes to standing out of the crowd. And you know, like, you know, we all do sales and outreach, and our people who are listening to us are doing that or setting teams for that. And often, you know, you get the typical cold email and it's like, it's all the same shit. And right. The thing is with you, you even shot a commercial when you were working selling copiers. And, you know, it's like you watch your commercial and you're like, well, this guy, if I need to buy a copier or anything, I'm just going to call this guy. So can you tell me a bit more of when you found, you know, like that you could stand out and when you actually kind of dared doing that? Because it takes a lot of guts to go and create this persona. So can you tell me more about that?
Yeah, my parents nurtured the creativity in me from a very young age. They saw that I had this strange gift of authenticity as a child that they knew would kind of follow me if they were able to nurture it correctly into my adult years. I think a lot of parents can relate to that are listening. Like, I have a son now and I feel the same way. You know, I see little things in him that I'm going to nurture and hopefully allow to blossom as he gets older that come out. And so my parents, because of that, they never put a leash on me or a muzzle around my mouth. They encouraged me to be audacious, but in a way that was compassionate, I should say. It's probably the best way to describe who I am. I'll tell you a quick story. Mm-hmm. When I was a young kid and I played sports, something that sticks out in my mind when I think about it, because I actually listened to my dad tell this story to people when he would describe me. There was a kid that played on our team that nobody passed the ball to. And anybody listening that's played sports as a young teenager or child, you know that there was always that one kid that spent more time on the bench and his parents just wanted him to play sports to kill some time or to be athletic, whatever it was, right? It's the outcast. But when he would come to the game, he was the only person I passed the ball to. I wanted to see him succeed. That was my goal. And really what I wanted to do was not just see him succeed, but do it together. You know, and so I was there to help and to hold his hand through the process. And I'll never forget, you know, that he had scored a basket. We were losing the game at this point. We were winning, but then we put him in and we were losing the game because I kept passing him the ball, basically. Everybody was pissed at me for this, right? But he scored this basket, and you would have thought that we won. You know, him and I, we were celebrating like crazy on the court. And so for me, it was a mixture of that part of my personality with the creativity that I led with. And when I got into B2B sales, dude, I'd been in music for 7 or 8 years at that point. You know, I started my band when I was about 14 years old with one of my best friends. And by the time we were 17, we were on the road touring full time. And so for me, it was kind of easy to go from that to B2B and not have to be shackled to their rules, because I already had my own in the first place. So when people said, hey, you got to wear a suit, I would wear a vest instead. I'd be like, no, you know, I'll wear a vest instead. So, and it coined the nickname for me of Vest Boy over time, because what I was doing, nobody liked, right? Yeah. Especially in my industry, nobody liked it. My prospects though, they freaking loved it. So when I sat back and said, I'm going to make these TV commercials and I'm going to create this crazy marketing stuff, which I know nobody can see right now except for me and you, but when I put this stuff together, I'm going to have my prospect in mind. I'm going to think about what it is that they have to deal with on a daily, weekly, monthly basis when it comes to salespeople and how they are cold called currently. And everyone hates the salesperson, right? It's just what it is. And if we don't accept it, we sit around and pretend like, nah, it's not the case. But, you know, people love us. They just don't like our tactics. But after they buy from us, they say, oh, it was good for me. And that's all bullshit. People that sit around and lie to themselves about these kinds of facts are the types of people that never really truly find the success that they desire. Mm-hmm. Right? They might make a lot of money and drive a nice car. But look, you don't know the situation surrounding those people. And when you have an attitude that's exclusive and not inclusive, especially in sales, you push the community away. And eventually you're the guy in the corner that nobody likes in the first place, because you've just ripped everybody off.
Yeah,
or at least that's their perception of it. So for me, I said, I want to wear who I am on my sleeve. Mm-hmm. I want people to know, even if they don't believe me, that I am someone that wants to take care of them, that wants to involve them in my life, that wants to culture community over commission checks in my walk. And because of that, you know, things like the commercial that you were talking about were born. And I also, like, just as a side note, I spent a ton of money on that stuff. My own personal dollars. My company didn't support me in those things. They didn't say, like, here's a check, bro. I did it myself. And I did it because I made the decision to choose Legendary as a salesperson at a young age.
Yeah. Well, that's really, really interesting. And what you said about creativity and having parents who can like nurture that, I think it's really super important. For me, I got really lucky to have my grandfather when I was 15. You know, I wanted to do my pilot license. I created like a band. I was not touring at all, but like I wanted to do my private pilot license to fly planes. And he told me, yeah, okay, you're telling me about that, but just, you know, what you have to do is just go to the airport, say, I'm going to do anything it takes to actually go and understand this world. So I actually went there, asked, you know, if I could clean the planes for free against them, you know, taking me and fly. And yeah, the guys did it. And then I remember this day, I was like, okay, everything's possible. You know, if you go and ask, you know, you can do everything you want. So then, like, this kind of thing, I think it's super important to have like your support system, like helping you on that. And yeah, I think it's pretty cool. So there's one thing I read today and you released recently. It's called The Crumpled Letter. Can you tell us a bit more about that?
Sure. Yeah. First, for everybody listening, The Crumpled Letter is not my original idea. I've been getting that a lot lately. It's actually something that I stole from a guy that was in real estate back in 2004. Mm-hmm. And when I say stole, I mean borrowed for the betterment of society, really. But my version is different than theirs, right? And it's probably different than most people's that know of what the crumpled letter is in the first place, because there are elements inside of marketing that we leave out constantly. We're way too quote unquote business professional in our walks, and we're less human. And so because of that, I took this idea that this real estate guy had put together, which was to write listings that had been out on the market for 90 days. And now this is 2004. It was the peak of the real estate season and existence, like it's inside of the United States, right? Every home was selling. And so this guy would send out these letters through direct mail, which was dead at that time, you know, from late 1990 into 2005, 2006, you know, there was a statistic that said that less than 0.05% of direct mail was read, right? And, you know, something ridiculous like that, right? And like, that was the stat too. This guy would send out to hundreds of these listings and sometimes thousands, and he would hear from, you know, five people. And he thought, well, this isn't good. Like there are thousands of people. So what should I do? And so what he did is he wrote in a red permanent marker and he crumbled up basically the letter in the envelope and put, "Don't throw me away again," before he would send them. And so he would basically resend that direct mail to the same people and say, "Hey, you threw me away before, but I have something for you. I've been resurrected from the trash. Don't throw me away again," was the idea. And so I thought to myself, like, that's freaking brilliant. So what we did is we created a free download that you can get all my social pages is where you can find it, from Instagram inside of my bio to LinkedIn, inside of my content posts. Every content post for the last week, actually, in the comments, you can find a link to it. But the free crumpled letter is interesting because we give it away. We give you the script. We give you the mindset, right? But there's also a paid version of it. And there's a paid version of the entire letter cadence. Because what I think the problem is inside of marketing is that too many people come up with this one idea, like, "Hey, let me send a shoe and tell the prospect, now that I've got one foot in the door, can I set an appointment with you?" And the thing is that they send that to 10 people and like one or two of them set the appointment. Well, what do you do with the other eight? You know, you keep calling them and keep calling them. Do you send another shoe? There's no real cadence to those types of audacious marketing tools. And so in my sales walk, I decided I'm going to do this differently. So I didn't just have a crumpled letter. I had a pre-burnt letter. I had a coffee stain letter. I had a letter traveled around the world. I even have a digital version of the letter as well, too. Shout out to Chelsea Hoffman, actually, who's one of my students and mentees that helped me design and develop it. Because I'll tell you this, the Sales Rebellion is not a training and teaching organization as much as it is a community, right? We do coaching and we help organizations and individual contributors, but we're a community and we're always looking to empower each other. It doesn't matter whose idea it was to begin with. It's about whether or not it works, right?
Yeah.
The other letters inside of the program are even better than the crumpled letter, right? But because the crumpled letter is something that essentially has been offered, you know, through other people's walks over the years, we're just giving it away because it's public knowledge and it should remain that way. People that have been hoarding these ideas for so long in the first place should let them out, right? Yeah. So I'll tell you this though, everybody listening, the content, the copy in my crumpled letter is better than anybody else's, and I'll fight anybody that wants to go on that one with me.
and what I liked, so I was reading it today, and it's in the letter, you say, "Hey, I'm actually crumpled already, so you know it's easier for you to throw me away." And so I really like this kind of of thing, and for me it's something I discovered in when I was negotiating with customers. So I'm not doing it so much, but I was selling a B2B like a crowd testing for a company in the US. And I was saying to the guy, "Say, hey, so here's the price. By the way, we all know that it's 20% higher than expected. So, you know, you're free to negotiate if you want. I won't like force you to do it, but if you want to negotiate, just go ahead, you know?" And so these kind of things are often, it puts a smile on people's face and they're like, "Well, this person's different." And, I think that's super important to do these kind of things. And so you also developed a framework called Reason. So R-E-A-S-O-N. Can you tell me more about that?
Yeah, Reason is to radically educate and share one's narrative. That's the short form version of it, to kind of just remember it. The concept, again, is like this audacious walk inside of your sales life. And the idea, too, of encouraging yourself not to just throw a pitch, but to radically educate, to tell your story, to create a narrative with your prospect. So that the long form version of it is that RE stands for radical education. And the idea of that is exactly what we just talked about. You know, we believe in a system that starts with a drop, and a drop is to us an introduction. When you meet somebody for the first time at a party, you don't shake their hand, tell them you can offer them financial freedom, ask them if they have 15 minutes on their calendar next Tuesday and set an appointment, right? Yeah. You just chat with them. You get to know them. You allow them to discover you, to figure out who you are, to become curious and inquisitive, just as you should be with them as well. Mm-hmm. And so now we're both meeting each other at 100%, right? We're not like bending, you know, 50-50, right? We're both interested. We both have curiosity. We both want to build something bigger here. And so we believe in this system, you know, and people say all the time, they say, well, doesn't that take time? Well, guess what? If I have a cadence of, like, let's just say the letter campaign, like we just talked about, if I have a cadence of 5 touches with that letter campaign, I can set up very easily if I'm an SDR, because let's just say that too, because people love to throw that curveball. Well, I'm not an account executive, I'm an SDR. Well, stop making excuses and put them in the mail. And the idea is that you can do these things. It just takes a little bit of extra effort, but you can still make your 80 calls a day. You can just send out, you know, a solid 100 letters at the beginning of the week. And out of your 80 calls a day throughout that week, 100 of those calls will be to people that potentially received this letter. And I'm telling you right now that when you've talked to somebody that has gotten one of the letters out of the cadence, because you do it week after week after week, that there is a difference. As a matter of fact, you head over to my content today, you can hear one of my students and his joy, you know. And today, by the way, is December 18th, because I don't know when this podcast is coming out, but you can hear the joy in his voice, right? He says, it was amazing. Those are his exact words when he describes the feeling of the reaction and the process of going and dropping a letter off to somebody. Mm-hmm. And just, you know, he even said that he asked the prospect privately outside of that. He said, you know, he told me that he asked the prospect, you know, what did you think of this? Right. Because we teach honesty inside of the reason framework as well too. We say, get feedback. Like, don't be afraid to ask questions that people would say are unpopular. Or, you can't do that in sales. It's bullshit. Yeah. So he asked them that question. They said, this made my day. Right. This made that I was very grateful for this. Right. And that, again, like, that concept is what we're missing in sales, you know? So attention is the A inside of reason. S is stands for story. O stands for outline. N stands for nuance. It's a whole system that we've created. You know, we believe in the idea of narratives over, you know, rebuttals. When you get an objection, we believe in the concept of an outline, you know, when we're setting an appointment. We believe in how powerful a story is, not just because it's a story, but because it activates the brain. If we do it right, the entire brain, not just the node that says, this is information that a salesperson's giving me, and I'm going to take it as fact or fiction and make a decision, right? Instead, it causes all of the brain power to turn into motion and to think deeper and to meet you in the place that you're meeting them in to begin with, right? So it is psychology 101 is what it is inside of sales.
Yeah, exactly. And what you said about, like, emotions, I think it's something super important in sales. So often, you know, we go and we have all these corporate setting, everyone's got, like, it depends on the industry, but, like, people are very serious. For me, I sold a lot in France and sold to enterprise companies there. And typically, you know, you're going to talk to procurement, all these kind of people, and they are super serious. And actually, they know about that. They know if they kind of go into this emotional state, and then they're gonna, like, their defense system will actually go down, shut down. So they always avoid this kind of thing. But I think, like, the emotions is something super important. For me, I'm a big fan of working on uncovering a pain and then working really hard on that. If you know about Sandler training, that's a big thing they work on. But overall, like, finding this kind of thing that prevents the prospect from going to the state where they want to be, and kind of linking that to your solution, I think that's super, super important. And that's also something I train a lot of people on that. Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. So there was an interview where you said you were actually into the 2 million club. Am I right? Once right. You were, so you sold 2 million USD or more, with an average deal size of 10K, right?
So like 10 to 12. Yeah. Somewhere in that range. Yeah.
So how many copiers does that make per day? I think that's a ton, right?
It's a ton. And the part of the story that I think a lot of people miss, you know, a lot of times it's just not part of the way that I tell it. And because of the way you framed it, I get to, is that a lot of that business of that 2 million, I think somewhere around 500,000, 600,000 of it I gave, it was well over 2 millions. I just don't really give the exact number. I don't really care, to be honest with you. And I don't think people really care, honestly, right? But I gave about 500 plus thousand to my team because I was the VP of sales and a selling manager. And what most people deal with a selling manager is they deal with a selling manager stealing their accounts and taking the inbound leads and getting an easy way out basically for themselves because they're greedy as shit. And that's the truth. But for me, it was about empowering my reps. And I had just built this team. I wanted to create loyalty, camaraderie. I wanted to create drive. I wanted to build passion. I wanted to tap into their worth. I wanted them to understand that even if they decided at some point in the coming days or the future years that it wasn't the right place for them to be, that they would be a really hard decision. But that they would feel empowered to make it if they needed to. And so, you know, when you got to the end of the year, you saw my number, but my reps knew that their number had that my deals were what made their number in the first place. Right. So it was one hell of a time, you know, and of course we had agreements on the back end to where in the copier world, essentially you claim the equipment and the manufacturer will give you spiffs, you know, and for us, it was basically dollars for this particular manufacturer. And so, you know, all the reps, it was great. Cause all the reps came back and was like, dude, this is yours. So why don't you take the spiffs? So, you know, it was like a give and then a get on top of it, you know, but it was the most fulfilling, the $2 million club was the most fulfilling year of my life, quite frankly. And I'll be honest with you, like if my owners have listened to any of those podcasts, they had no idea that I did that. And I couldn't tell them because it was like against the rules to help to give other people in the business, your deals like that, right? It was against the rules. Like, isn't that shit? You know, like that to me was a big reason why I exited, because how come it is against the rules to help other people? Like these aren't lazy kids. They're busting their ass. They're working 60 to 80 hour weeks. They deserve rewards. They deserve to be propped up, because only when we've experienced that kind of camaraderie can we really truly understand what a team culture and environment looks like to begin with.
Yeah, exactly. And I had like a kind of a similar story actually. So that was my first quarter being a manager. So I still had a quota to carry personally, but plus the quota of the team. And I remember I sacrificed my quota. I said, okay, I have no time to actually focus on my business because I have to focus on my rep who's kind of struggling. And he told me he want to leave. And so we worked together on that. I spent all my time like going on site with this guy and everything. And I was so proud because actually I didn't make it to President's Club, but this guy made it. And he went from being like the underperforming rep to this guy going to President's Club. And so I think it was, I think that's helping helping your comrades. As you said, it's something super important. And and the day the company actually stopped promoting that, so we got acquired by private equity, and then it was like the end of the glorious days. So then that's when I left, you know. And I think it's super important to have this kind of a team spirit, as you said.
Sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
And so I checked like also on your website, and there's another framework you developed called KNOW, KNOW. Can you also tell me more about that?
Yeah, so the framework itself is actually tied into what we call the sales wanderer theory. And it's the idea of truly understanding your territory from a different perspective. And the KNOW theory fits in because it actually, the abbreviation is that knowledge needs observation and wisdom. Mm-hmm. So often in the sales world, do we believe that we have observed and have gained wisdom inside of a discovery or a tour of a facility or learning more about the prospect? But for the most part, it's typically surface level. It's not based on experience. It's just based on information being passed from one party to the next. Mm-hmm. It's generic. It's bland. It's what you need to know as the salesperson and what the buyer needs you to hear so they can get what they need. So it's this kind of this two-way street of manipulation, honestly, something that we all need to kind of wrap our heads around and be honest about as well too. So a lot of honesty that needs to happen inside of the sales world, as you can tell if you're listening, it's at least in my opinion, right? But again, the concept of what is true observation, what is true wisdom, and how does a sales wanderer really nurture and create a culture inside of their territory behind that principle? You know, so we have a thing called the wanderer's backpack on top of it. We talk about the tools that the wanderer needs on a daily basis in order to uncover and unlock those types of relationships and that type of deeper understanding. But a lot of it is based on mindset. You know, mm-hmm. people say that mindset is fluffy and it's not, you know, what you should do is hire a rep or a sales trainer that'll, you know, teach you to pound the phones, you know, $100 a day. To me, that's nuts. You know, mm-hmm. success starts at home. Success starts with your health. Success starts with your spiritual life. Success starts with you knowing yourself, personal development, right? You know, and so a lot of the sales wanderer theory is based around you. And it's great because like when you say sales wanderer, it's a cool concept, right? But at the same time, it kind of has this second meaning, you know, of somebody searching, right? And mm-hmm. and looking. And really how we tie that into self-development is that the sales wanderer is always looking inward and trying to develop themselves mm-hmm. further, right?
Okay.
How is it that I am practicing awareness of a situation, of others, of myself, right? So that's kind of the bigger picture of the abbreviation and what's wrapped around it. So
okay. Really interesting actually. And the awareness, I think it's pretty cool because you're kind of bringing meditation and mindfulness in sales. So it's something that is really interesting. I have something actually, it's not so much of a sales question, but like I meet a lot of people who are really successful in sales and then they switch jobs. And then, you know, they have to restart everything from scratch. And a lot of them actually are considering doing what you and me did, basically, is like creating something, like training people. Can you maybe tell about your story on actually quitting your job and creating the Sales Rebellion? How did you do that?
Yeah. Well, first off, I spent just about 13 years and some change in the B2B space selling copy machines. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll say that from the beginning, if you go back to my origins, I sucked at sales. I believed that I was good, which is an interesting thought at this point in my walk, right? But I like the confidence that I had. I always look back and think the confidence was good, the drive was great, but I sucked at sales. And at a certain point, I realized it. And I said, man, I need help. You know, and I had the greatest teacher on earth, my father. And the best part of the way that he taught me was that he created all the things that you hear me talking about, bro, are him. You know, they're what he nurtured in me and what he created in me. You know, they weren't necessarily his original thought, but it's what he allowed me to think up for myself. And that's what we as salespeople forget constantly, is that we have this mindset and this mentality of trying to force our agenda on others, right? Even when we're quote unquote listening, you know, the sales world likes to say constantly, listen more than you speak, but then they follow it up with a but, right? Instead of an and, which is much different. You know, so the idea of the but is, you know, get them to sign the paperwork, do whatever it takes, right? Speak directly to your prospect on objections and change their mind. Dude, politicians, you know, Democrats, Republicans sitting in a room trying to change each other's minds. Give me a break, bro. Yeah. It's the same concept when you sit in front of a buyer. They say, this is how I feel about this. And then when you try to say, well, let me change your mind, that's the same kind of challenge to an extent. Yeah. I know I'm being a little extreme in that, but honestly, they don't know you. They have no trust or credibility with you in those moments. You're just somebody they found on the internet and they called for a third bid, right? Yeah. And those are the realities.
Yeah.
So when I started to sit back and kind of realize that the bigger picture of sales, I started to develop the Sales Rebellion system and I didn't even know it. You know, by the time I was 2 years into sales, you mentioned Sandler sales training. I actually ended up meeting my coach and mentor, Ed Jordan, through Sandler sales training. I became a rookie of the year, I think is what they called it in Sandler sales training, my first year, because of my massive amount of closed business. And I became an alpha inside of the sales world. You know, some people call it the 1%. I just call it a true, genuine person. It wears their heart on their sleeve. And I see so many people that don't get the same kind of recognition that I have over the years that have done more than me and done it better than me, even inside of the same heart space that we're talking about here. So it's not like I'm the only person out doing this. There's plenty out there. And really the Sales Rebellion and the system that I created is built around the idea of tapping into someone else's authenticity, not teaching them a system so that they can forget everything that they know, but getting deeper within them to pull their strengths, to pull their weaknesses, to build on both, right?
Yeah.
To help them to see that it's okay that you are the way that you are, but you need to understand awareness of others, right? And throughout the process, not to go on a tangent, right? But throughout the process of my career, I started to create these outbound prospecting methodologies that were different, you know, based around my reason theory. I created, you know, a morning routine that turned into a daily routine that turned into a weekly, monthly, quarterly routine. And it's an inconsistent one at that, one that keeps you curious, keeps the life walk adventurous, right? And I call it my roots theory. And, you know, I've got all kinds of stuff right inside of the rebellion system. And so I woke up one day and I was dealing with some turmoil at work, you know, not going to lie. Mm-hmm. And I opened up my LinkedIn. And at this point I was still the copier warrior, just kind of posting content every day on LinkedIn from the year 2017 until today. I post once a day, Monday through Friday, every morning at 7 a.m. like clockwork. Mm-hmm. And at this point in time, it was 2018 and I had kind of an elite following. I had a lot of friends that I had met, but this random guy sent me a message that I'd never talked to before. And in the midst of this turmoil and this indecisiveness and this questioning of my walk, I read a message from somebody in the middle of the United States that just took a leap of faith and said, "Hey, I love what you're doing, but when are you going to let the rest of us have some?" And basically he said, you know, how come I can't hire you to train my teams? How come I can't hire you to bring your ideas to my company? Why is that not a thing? And he changed my life, dude.
Yeah.
He's a dear friend of me now. He's even a mentor to me as well too at this point in my walk. Somebody that I trust dearly. And a lot of people that are in my life that hold that type of place in my walk came to me the same way. Just took a leap of faith and reached out to me, right? And became somebody that ended up influencing and changing the way that I look at my walk. And so I in January sat back and said, I have nothing lined up except for this one message from this one guy. But I wonder what would happen if I took a leap of faith and I risked it all. My dad used to tell me all the time, without risk, there is no reward that is worth gaining, right?
Yeah.
Because we get rewards all the time in life, but we never think about that deeper perspective and exactly how rewarding it truly is.
So. Yeah, that's really interesting. It was something very similar to me. You know, it was like, huge pain, growing pain in my new job, you know, and I met like a trainer that I also interviewed on the podcast, Skip Miller, and he's quite big in the US in B2B tech sales. And, you know, like I was in the training and I had been in this job for 3-4 months and I went to the training and I was like 3 hours in the training. I was like, shit, he's doing the job I want to do. That's my dream job. And I'm going to have to quit because, you know, I have to do what he's doing right now. And so, yeah, I remember I was like thinking, oh, but it's a nice job, you know, it's paying really well. And then the pain became so big that I was like, if I stay there, I'm just going to, you know, I'm going to get fired. That's for sure. So I'm just going to fire myself first and take destiny in my hands. So, yeah, that's good. And so there's maybe one last question before we wrap it up. So I like to ask people like if they had one advice to give to our audience, what would it be? So what's your one advice?
One advice, bro, I have a million things racing through my head at a time, right? So it's funny when people ask me this, I get to ask this question actually constantly. And a lot of times reps just kind of come up to me when I'm at an event or I'm doing something and do just that. Like, what's one thing I should change today, bro? But I tell everybody the same thing. I'm very consistent with this. My one piece of advice for anybody listening that is starting in sales or 30 years in, My one piece of advice is to ask yourself this question. Is what I'm doing authentic to me? Is how I'm living this sales walk genuine? Am I putting out the person, the work ethic, the effort, the drive that other people deserve to have in the first place? Or am I just living this mediocre lifestyle, right? What is it? Is it one or the other? And if you sit back and you think to yourself, honestly, I'm not quite there. I take orders from somebody else. And it's okay to listen to your boss, people. I'm not saying that. But it's different when you compromise morals and you compromise who you are, right? It's a big difference, right? So think deep about that question and answer that, the advice for yourself. right? Like make your own choice.
Yeah.
You know, and if you want to know more, then just follow my content and I'll help you to tap deeper into that side of you.
Love it. I think that's really good advice. Like always asking this question. And it's really good. So if people want to hear more of you, so that's now is time to promote whatever you have to promote. So where can people go to hear more of you?
Word. Yeah. You know, I mean, going to salesrebellion.com is always easy. You can find all my contact information on there. And I'm serious. I mean, all of my contact information. Mm-hmm. You can find me at linkedin.com/IN/copywriter. Any other social site, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, @SalesRebellion or /SalesRebellion. When you go to their main website, you can just search Sales Rebellion. I'm even on YouTube. I post content daily on LinkedIn. It's kind of sporadic on the other social sites because I do everything myself. I don't believe in the concept of letting somebody else run that part of my walk, and I never will. I'll always be somebody that does their own content. So they can find me on any of those sites. But I would say, of all of them, make sure you definitely check out LinkedIn, join my feed, join the conversation, learn from others. There's amazing people that jump into my comment section. You'll find more people like me that you can fellowship with and build your community of rebels around you.
Okay, great. Perfect. So definitely Sales Rebellion. And then you're going to find everything, Instagram, Snapchat, whatever. Are you on Snapchat?
I'm on Snapchat.
Bro. Okay, my God. Okay, that's great. So he's everywhere. Good. So thanks so much, Dale. That was really, really great to hear about you. So talk soon and have a great day.
Well, thanks, bro.
Thanks for listening to this episode. If you like what you hear, you can go to b2bsalespodcast.com to subscribe to the newsletter. You will receive the episode in your mailbox every second and fourth Wednesday of the month. And don't forget to follow the episode on Spotify or subscribe on Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts. And finally, if you know someone who could like that episode, feel free to share it.